Hello and welcome to today's program of the Commonwealth Club of California. My name is Kevin O'Malley. I'm chairman of the Business and Leadership Forum here at the club and your host for tonight. Our program tonight is Oceans Open for Business. This is the SOCAP preview program for 2013. I'm going to introduce our moderator, Jeff Leifer. Jeff is the chairman of the Oceans Track at the SOCAP conference this year. He also has his own company called Circadian Media, and I'm going to let Jeff open the program and then introduce our panelists. Thank you.
Thank you, Kevin. Welcome, everybody. So we have an opportunity tonight to talk about SOCAP, which is the Social Capital Markets Conference and Platform and Community, and at the same time to talk about oceans and sustainable seafood and the ecosystem that makes up this complex and important natural resource. I'll start with SOCAP, and then I'll introduce Monica Jane and Kevin Jones. I just want to say that SOCAP is in its sixth year, and from the beginning, I've had the pleasure of being associated with SOCAP and knew that this would be the beginning of a movement, not just a conference or a series of gatherings or even a series of important initiatives, but more than that. And so SOCAP helps us to build tools to attract and secure investment dollars, to create infrastructure and ecosystems where sort of the bridges are out, if you will. And after the last 5 years, SOCAP as a community under the leadership of Kevin, under his tutelage, realized that we're ready to go into content verticals. And the question was, with all the challenges in the social sector and the globe today, where do we go? And so we're going to answer the question of why oceans tonight? Why connect social capital markets, this community of impact investors, philanthropists, angels, and other players in the realm of the flow of capital into the social sector, why connect it with oceans and the ocean space? And a big part of what we're going to be able to talk about tonight is that the oceans ecosystem, that creating a more sustainable and resilient oceans ecosystem is a real opportunity. It's an opportunity for investors. It's an opportunity for communicators, for educators. It's basically a space that has begun to be mapped in a rather holistic fashion by a number of key players, including the two folks that you're going to hear from tonight. So now that SOCAP has helped to validate the space of impact investing and looked deeply into what is the good economy, we're going to now bring that lens and the power and potency of that platform to a specific case study this year, starting next week at this large gathering, SOCAP, as we look at sustainable and healthy oceans. And Kevin's going to also have an opportunity tonight to talk a little bit about health and healthy communities and how they interact with the health and sustainability of our oceans, because those are the two areas that we're going to focus on at the broader SOCAP gathering. Let me start by just, you've probably seen a little bit of background on Monica Jane. It's been such a pleasure to get to know you, Monica, and to see the work that you've done. It's really inspiring. Monica has her own venture called Manta Consulting. She has advised numerous philanthropists, worked very closely with large foundations such as the David and Lucille Packard Foundation. She's sort of the guru for some of the program directors over there in the ocean space, and I've seen your work firsthand, and I want to get in line and get some help. So really, really impressive. And Monica Jane has started an extremely important program called Fish 2.0. And that is it's a competition, basically. It's a business competition. And it's a brilliant, I think, approach to redressing a gap between sort of entrepreneurial capacity in the ocean space and investors and investor dollars and investor knowledge. How do we connect this up? Monica's really pioneered that space, and I'm eager to hear you talk about it tonight. Kevin Jones, many of you know, is the founder and convener of SOCAP and has founded an important venture capital firm. It's been doing great work for many years called Good Capital. It invests in social enterprises. Kevin's run many, many businesses that he exited, and they all did really well, and so he got a bunch of credibility. And so when he went into social venture and social change as it connects to enterprise and capital, the people that invest big bucks both in the Valley as well as on Wall Street and now abroad said, okay, this guy is sort of an Elon Musk in the social venture space. I want to get behind the mule. And so it's been happening. It's been happening. And I'm really excited, Kevin, that you joined us tonight. I know you're convening 1,700 people in a couple of days, and they're coming in from all over the world. And and you're on top of this health and healthy communities track as well as this oceans track and how they cross-fertilize and why they're both relevant. And I think what's going to be fun tonight is that Kevin Jones has helped to validate with his team, you know, his partner and his team, helped to validate this important space of social capital and impact investing. It's exactly what Monica Jane is doing right now in the sustainable ocean space, the sustainable seafood space, looking at the supply chain. And so they're going to get a chance to talk to each other. This is a much more focused and smaller scale market, and that's the place to start. And there's a lot of reasons to do it that way, which is what Monica's been doing. Mm. She's going to talk to us about that. And then Kevin built this platform in this larger space and now has the advantage of focusing it as a lens down onto these important social problems. So this is a really nice full circle coming together tonight. And it's just been an honor to work with my team, one of whom is in the audience, Lindsay Norcutt, who's the project manager for the Oceans Track, and has just been invaluable in helping us pull together, you know, dozens of panels and bring together hundreds of speakers, and we're going to get to highlight that tonight and really officially launch the track tonight here at the Commonwealth Club. So let's start with Monica. I'd love for you to talk a little bit about how you came to Fish 2.0 and why.
Well, thanks. We really started Fish 2.0. I've been working in the seafood space and the fishery space and ocean conservation for many years, since 1993. And one of the things, let me just context the seafood marketplace for everyone that maybe is less familiar with it. So seafood business is a subset of all of the oceans related businesses. And the wild capture seafood marketplace is about $390 billion. Big, and the fish farming and aquaculture marketplace is another $120 billion marketplace and growing. And on top of that, the other market force we're seeing is that there's as everybody knows, a very active local food movement, and that's creating a lot of opportunities for change in the processing and distribution sector in the seafood marketplace, which is also a multi-billion dollar industry. And so what we were seeing is that although these markets are huge and although the impact investing space is growing, as Kevin can attest, we weren't seeing very much activity by impact investors in the seafood business space or in the sustainable seafood business place. And we started to say, why is that? And what we were seeing is that investors told us they were only seeing about 4 or 5 deals a year. So there weren't enough deals in one place for them to start to get a sense of what's really happening out there in the marketplace. We also knew that the businesses were doing, many sustainable seafood businesses were doing good things. I know some of you are familiar with that. But they were really bad at communicating to investors in investment language about what they were doing. And so the dots weren't connecting. And so we really created Fish 2.0 as a way to connect investors with seafood businesses, to create incentives for seafood businesses to start to learn and talk in investment language so they can meet investors, learn from them in the process, and then start to work with them together to build and scale their businesses.
Let me interrupt you for 1 second and just ask kind of a behind-the-scenes question that I know Kevin's probably wanting to ask as well, which is how much coaching have you had to do with the investors? They're good people. They know their skills. They work in other sectors, but they don't know anything about this space a lot of times when they come to you. What really goes on?
Well, I've had to do a little bit of coaching, but the extent of my coaching has been just do what you do normally in investment, because at the end of the day, investing in seafood businesses, you're going to do the same things. You're going to look for the same things as you'll look for in all other businesses that you're doing. So if there's technical issues that you need to understand, we'll connect them with technical experts. Or usually the entrepreneur is quite a good technical expert themselves. So the main thing they have to do is ask questions and not be shy about asking questions.
So for those of us that are particularly interested in some of the larger oceans ecosystem issues and less knowledgeable about the sustainable seafood supply chain issues, are they related?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I think they're absolutely related. What I say and what I often tell investors is, if you're working on impact investing, especially if you're working on impact investing in food systems, let your portfolio reflect all the food on your plate. Mm-hmm. So a portion of your plate should be about seafood because that's part of what's there. If you wouldn't only want to invest in dairy or in vegetables or in meat products or something else, you want to have your portfolio reflect the entire plate. And I think what we're actually having a panel discussion at SOCAP that I'm looking forward to, where we're bringing together several investors that have traditionally invested in other spaces who are now starting to do some deals in the ocean space. And they're going to discuss at during SOCAP, they're going to discuss a deal that they did outside of the seafood space and how what they learned in that space is applying to a deal that they're now looking at in the seafood space. And what we're finding is a lot of parallels, because at the end of the day, distribution and processing business models can be the same for dairy or egg production as for seafood.
That's such a good point. Since you pointed out the panel, I just want to share the name of the three panels that you're going to be moderating. And no one else is moderating more than one panel. So we had Monica Jane, had to be, we just needed her. Impact Investors Dipping a Toe in the Ocean is the name of the session at SOCAP that Monica was just referring to, where people are working traditionally in other sectors and are going to bring their skills to bear on our ecosystem that we're all interested in. The second one is called Finding Deals and Finding Capital in the Ocean Sector. And the third one is called Investment Ready Programs Put into Context, where we talk about programs from Europe, India, Hawaii, et cetera. And many of these sessions will be covered through podcasts and recordings and on the SOCAP website. And
those, live streaming.
And live streaming, exactly. Mm-hmm. And so you can get a hold of Lindsay Norcutt or myself and follow up if you're not able to attend the conference directly. But it's going to be a really interdisciplinary, sort of holistic approach to these otherwise rather granular issues, how to recontextualize them.
We're very excited about it. It's really, it's great. This is the first time SOCAP has done an oceans track, and it's really exciting for both the impact investing community and for the oceans community. And we've seen interest building over the last few months immensely in this as a result of SOCAP picking it up as a major track.
Beautiful. And that segues nicely, I think, into a question I have for you, Kevin. Now, you're an expert on markets, you know, and you're an expert around capital and how to validate a market space. You've worked in big data. You've worked in sort of the business venture of journalism and media and in consumer products and just in so many spaces. What, you know, helped you to be inspired to think that a stakeholder community that's interested in impact investing and putting big dollars in everywhere from Africa to, you know, Madagascar and Mozambique, you know, Asia, what made you think that that community could get their attention around these important issues in oceans and sustainable seafood? Because it didn't seem like an obvious one to most people.
Yeah, it doesn't really. you know, if you think about the kind of stuff we would do in this impact investing, you can imagine, you know, mobile payments in the developing world, how you can be like M-Pesa that does mobile payments in Kenya, how can you do elsewhere. You'd think about renewable energy in the developing world, where you're taking out, you know, kerosene that kills somewhere between 1 million and 3 million tied to cook stoves a year, and but you're saving the energy cost 40%. We focused on some of that kinds of things. But really, we didn't think of it. Lisa Monson from the Packard Foundation came and said, look, I got this problem. You know, they're the leading foundation in this space. There's often a bell cow kind of, you know, Robert Wood Johnson is our lead in health, and we actually brought them in. But here, she said, we spent $100 million, and we basically figured out we're wrong, and we need to change our approach. And they said, our approach has been, you know, to bring in our lawyers and our scientists and try to be smarter about how we retreat. and realize, well, long term, if you keep retreating, you know, you keep retreating, and we only have this one planet. And so that's not a good approach, and we need this other opportunity. There's no conversation where the oceans is about opportunity. There's lots of conversations about, oh, my God, the Pacific gyre, the plastic, it's going to come up in my bathtub. It's going to strangle my baby. What's it going to do? Everybody's afraid. And you know, but we wanted to look at she just came to us because we were kind of good at helping people think crazy new ways. Mm-hmm. And she said, what if we thought about the oceans as an opportunity? What could the market do as a trim tab? And that's this really cool word that I keep using and people don't get. But if you explain it, they get it. And it's Bucky Fuller started using it. And you can't turn a big ocean liner with a rudder because too much momentum is going that way. But this little bitty tab on the edge can change the flow that lets you change the rudder. So she, you know, we said, and Jeff was in the initial conversation, and they said, how can we use the market as a trim tab to start making people think about the revitalization of the oceans as it could be an opportunity? Because entrepreneurs don't think about it. And the unreasonable incident is one interesting data point. They've had like 1,200 people apply to be an entrepreneur, and it's accelerator, doing good. Only two were about oceans. One was nonprofit, one was for-profit, one's gone bust. And but there's nobody's looking at it. So we said, well, let's change the way people look at it by saying the stuff Marnik is doing is in this larger context of there's not enough philanthropy to fix the oceans, and there's not enough government money to fix the oceans. So the market has to be engaged, which means sustainable seafood, but it means tech stuff. It means a lot of things beyond seafood. It means, you know, many things like restoring coastal communities. And so they don't, you preserve the mangroves with indigenous people in charge, and it's better for fish, better for people, those sorts of things.
So you're alluding now to some of the interconnectedness and sort of the, you know, the Bucky Fuller, you know, bigger picture and trim tab. So what kinds of things have you learned working in different sectors are required to validate a space that
really
that Monica's
point.
Probably, you know,
well,
needed
so,
to
and Monica knows this better than I, but I'll say something that she told me, then act like I know it. but we got the LEED Foundation involved, and there was a group called Confluence Philanthropy that was this group of foundations that are trying to move toward impact investing. And impact investing means you want your money to do good. That's really what it means. It doesn't mean you want it to do good and you're not about that. It means you're about that. That's what you want your money to do, and you want to get it back, and you want to figure out how much return you want. Sometimes having a fast return, like with Obamacare and mHealth, you should have a fast return because the system is changing, and you can make more money serving poor people right now because you want to keep them out of the emergency room because they never talk. It's important to be really fast at venture speed there. Mm-hmm. With the oceans, it's important to manage it on the scale that my grandsons can inherit it. That's mm-hmm. a different kind of problem. Mm-hmm. So we got the LEED Foundation involved, and that led to the two other bell cow partner. You know, Moore Foundation is really big and a little bit clueless, and they like to follow people. That's probably not how I should say it. We should, you should edit that, Kevin. They're long-term deliberate, and they just haven't figured out deliberating on to do what yet.
They're
science-oriented.
Yeah,
they're
science-oriented.
Yeah,
and
they
good at science.
They could do more good if the world were different. But so they need to follow people. But then you also got the Packard Foundation, who can actually work with coastal communities and people, because mm-hmm. foundations have these incredibly myopic theories of change. So when we first talked to Packard, they can deal with salt water and brackish water and fresh water in California. Mm-hmm. And now with us, they're looking at coastal communities and the people who like cause things to flow out, you know, mm-hmm. plastic, other kinds of things. So they want to expand past this 19th century theory of change they got stuck with. They got stuck with 19th mm-hmm. century science trying to be something. Just makes them dumb. It's a structure
Got
that
it.
Makes them dumb.
Totally.
So we're helping them be interdisciplinary. And mm-hmm. so we're helping them move forward. But once you had Packard and Moore and Rockefeller, mm-hmm. then you said, oh, all the other foundations saying, well, we better follow. We'll follow. So there's a lot of follow. If you get a certain group of the cool kids in the room, the other mm-hmm. kids follow. Mm-hmm. So they've done that with SOCAP, and we've done that with now entrepreneurs are starting to look at it. So there's this validation by people you trust, but you're confused and you're willing to follow them. So we got enough of that. Early markets are really confused.
So this is great because it really sets up the challenge. And, Monica, I want to turn to you on this and ask about, of course, investment dollars are needed to help build out these markets. But there's more going on, I sense, around operations, helping people grow their operations. And there's also, you have these different size players in the space. Mm-hmm. You have these very large fishing corporations, and then you have entrepreneurs and smaller operations. You have these coastal livelihood issues, which are sort of human resource issues that mm-hmm. Kevin's alluding to. What has your process been, and you know, what's your vision for addressing this challenge that Kevin has rightfully identified, I think, as a long-term play, and yet you and I have talked about how fast the large-scale fishing industry moves, how quickly it changes. How do you reconcile that? How do you address it, and what do you tell your entrepreneurs to focus on?
Well, I don't tell my entrepreneurs to focus on anything that they're not doing already because they need to focus on their businesses. But first I want to address something Kevin said, is that
they're not really clueless.
They're not really clueless, for one thing.
Mm-hmm. They just act that way.
But also, he said that, you know, people were looking at this and they weren't seeing a lot of businesses. And I will say that even 1 year ago, I would have said the same thing.
Yeah.
But our experience with Fish 2.0 has been that there are an immense number of businesses. Right. We had 160 businesses apply. Mm. We had 80 complete the application in the first round. And we have 40 still in the competition today, and we're at a very late stage. There'll be 20 that make it to the finals. Mm. I have more than 60 businesses signed up as future business competitors, and I haven't even announced a future business competition.
Wow.
So their businesses are out there.
Right.
We weren't talking to them in the right way to get them involved with us. So mm-hmm. I think that's one thing, and I think that's a lot of stuff that you guys do at SoCap.
Yeah.
You bring
yeah.
people together, mm-hmm. start talking to them, and then all of a sudden you realize what people are doing. And we
yeah.
haven't had that opportunity to bring entrepreneurs out of the woodwork.
And that's one thing that what she's doing is just what we're doing. It's just you find the valuable stranger that you wouldn't have run into, and now you find a way to say, oh, you really are in this group. Yeah,
right.
Finding those overlaps. That's mm-hmm. totally – I love what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. And then in terms of how – what we talk to them about, well, what we really do is we offer – in the competition, what we've done is we've offered them a structure and very clear criteria. And for any of you that are interested and you want to see what we're doing, everything that we do is open to the public. It's all open source. And you go www.fish20.org, and we have all the materials on the website. So we have structure, and we offer a competition structure and criteria. We also offer we also demand deadlines. And one thing that a lot of people have said to me who have participated not only in our business competition but in others, that as an entrepreneur of a growing business, you are always stressed for time.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way to get these guys to actually get their planning done and work on their presentation and do their financial planning and build their business models is to have a deadline.
Mm-hmm.
So mm-hmm. I want to say in the last phase we had 65 competitors, 99% turned in their entry in the last 24 hours.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that shows you that if we hadn't had a deadline, it wouldn't have happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
And yeah. So a lot of what we do is just offering that. We also pair each business with an investor advisor at each phase of the competition. The advisors have all offered us pro bono time, 6 hours over the period of over a 10-week period. And they just give feedback. They offer feedback to the competitor on their business. They don't become a part of their management team. They don't do anything like that. But they offer them feedback. Now, this is feedback they were not getting because what the businesses were saying, and this happened at all scales,
okay.
is they would apply for investment, and they would get back a no. But there was no commentary coming. So we asked the investor advisors to offer feedback also during the judging at each round, and we have multiple judges look at each deal at each round and score them. We ask everyone to write a few lines of feedback. All of that feedback is given to the competitors anonymously because we don't want them to think, this is what this guy says about my business. It doesn't matter who it is.
Mm-hmm.
Because investors basically will all say the same thing because most investors are looking for the same things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, good point. So this is a good setup then for Kevin for a question around, you've worked with a lot of entrepreneurs.
Mm-hmm.
Let's look at a couple of examples. You know, you know Aloysius, who mm-hmm. very much
right,
wanted to
right.
be here tonight. He's coming in from Africa. He got delayed, I guess, on his visa and can't arrive until tomorrow or the next day. So he's got this very small but very exciting venture that you know about as well, obviously, called Farmer Line.
Yeah.
You've also worked with folks that are doing some pretty innovative eco resort work down mm-hmm. in Mexico, where there's a fair trade piece.
Maybe
talk a little bit about why those are interesting to you
and
how they fit in here.
Sure. Aloysius Atah, Aloy is what he likes to be called, is a young Ghanaian. he grew up in a farming community and went off to school, became a techie, came back to a farming community, and he's solving a problem for that farming community. It's mostly women tilapia farmers, coastal Ghana. And he's built an app that does a lot of things for them. And his design approach is what I find really intriguing. I just kind of like, I met him on Facebook, you know, whatever. I do a lot of that with entrepreneurs. With this guy, there was something different about his approach. And there's many things you can say about Farmline, but he works with these farmers, and, you know, they make more money, they save money, and their jobs are easier because of his software. And so they're taking live fish to market, and, you know, he'll have voice tips come from the county agents about how to keep your fish alive, how to keep them non-stressed, other kinds of things around aquaculture that are timely to their production time. And in Ghana, there's an odd thing where the cooperative extension is relatively smart and able, but it's one county agent for every 4,000 farmers, and in the last year, they haven't been able to drive anywhere because they can't afford the gas. Mm-hmm. So they need to send he's been working with them to sort of turn their extension department advice to the tilapia farmers, the fish farmers, into small nuggets that are worked against their production timeline. And the other thing that was really interesting is that everybody else in Africa is really excited about SMS, texts, and transactions. Well, you know, the farmers aren't literate, so you got to send it in voice. Mm. And so he just sort of looked at who they were and how they could get the information and how they could get it out. And so it was not a place anybody else was looking. You know, voice was not hot. It's like, well, voice is the only thing that works with illiterate farmers. And so then he figured out that, you know, the timing of it was there was some money to get the message out so that cooperative extension can do that. And then the neat thing about it is that that's not even his customer. They make money, they save money, their jobs are better, but his real customer are the aid agencies who want these metrics, and evaluation. You know, there's all this stuff about where did my money go and how am I doing well. Well, people are glad to report on the metrics part of Alloy's application because his mobile app, because, you know, they're making more money, they're saving money, and their jobs are easier. So, of course, they'll check in because metrics is typically this Victorian thing sent down by the funder saying, I want to fund the deserving poor, and they put all the burden of reporting on the entrepreneur with no covering of that cost, but they just think that their theory of change allows them to oppress the entrepreneur and the nonprofit or for-profit with their own metrics. And then everybody has a different metric because they have their own unique flavors of theories of change and things. So, you know, it's a real oppressive Victorian mindset. But they get the data because people have opted into his application. So he's getting calls to expand it into Senegal, into Nepal, into other places. Because his approach, he uses an IDEO user-centric approach. And he just talks to people, figures out the problem, and figures out, you know, he does SMS where it works. Mm-hmm. But for illiterate farmers, you don't use voice.
Is this a form of market disruption in your mind?
I think it's
scalable?
A form of market
does that
disruption.
Matter to
yeah,
impact
is
investors?
It a form of market disruption? I know it makes them more money and it saves them money and they and their lives are better and the funders are happy, which I guess is but the thing that is disruptive about it is that it's entrepreneur-centric metrics as opposed to investor-centric metrics. Mm-hmm. So as a design principle, we're trying to incorporate his approach into a tool we call the Biocultural Resilience Tool, but you'll get high adoption if you make a tool that makes the entrepreneur's job better. Mm-hmm. And then the metrics folks who demand to know their impact will get their data because nobody hates the thing. It's like, finish your job, go report to the investor.
Right.
Oh, they're such a pain in the butt. Who has to do it today, you know?
Monica, anything sound familiar here in terms of when you get in the middle of this wonderful conversation between the investors and the entrepreneurs?
Yes, well, actually, the example you're giving, there's similar things going on in every fisheries market. And I would have to say it does cause market disruption because sometimes when those technologies are not available, the fishermen are forced to sell their fish through a distributor or a channel that's able to provide the reporting that's necessary. And so by providing these technologies that are very user-friendly and work with the people's skills at the level that they are at already, then all of a sudden they don't need that middleman anymore. They have more choices in terms of who they sell their fish to. It's a complete market disruption.
It totally is. And in some places it's just establishing the market, which is disruptive in its own way. And the other places that there is a market, you're disrupting it on behalf of the entrepreneur. It gives power to the entrepreneur.
It does, and it gives power to the supply chain in general. It gives power to the buyer. And we're seeing that we have several businesses in the competition that are doing that are whose businesses are based on technologies that will help make the selling and buying of fish more efficient.
Those are such great things.
You know, one of the things I think about SOCAP is it facilitates greater understanding between sectors, people from different geographic regions. Different worldviews. How much of that matters, Monica, in your space and in what you're doing with Fish 2.0? Is it all about efficiency and matching up dollars with ideas, or is there this human element that's sort of an X factor that's like around understanding what each other does so that you can get your head around it and actually be moved by it? Or am I projecting?
No, you're not projecting at all. It's absolutely about that, because when you're dealing with problems that you have, that the order of magnitude that we have in the oceans, and we're dealing with a system of business systems that have been evolving over time, but quite slowly in relation to some of the other business systems, which is what we see in seafood. You absolutely need people from other sectors and new thinkers to come in, because otherwise the change may happen eventually, but it's not going to happen quick enough. And so a lot of what the work that we do is inviting people in, inviting them to connect with each other. We don't I have no requirements. You must have something to offer and you must be willing to give time. But if you have something to offer and you're willing to spend time with some of the entrepreneurs, it doesn't matter what their background is. And what we found is the most useful people for some of the entrepreneurs have been people they wouldn't have talked to otherwise.
Interesting. And so, Kevin, you know, at SOCAP, you've helped to champion the idea of these two content verticals this year. It's not just oceans and sustainable seafood. It's also health and healthy communities. Do you see potential for cross-fertilization? Do you see them living side by side?
I think it's an interesting duality or two different lenses that we picked. Because we wanted to say this impact investing is real, it's big, it's growing, it's validated. Now where does it work? So we had to pick two areas. And so the oceans is this global thing, right? Think of the oceans for a minute. It's the big deep. It's the bottomless. It's the thing that overwhelms you. It's that global thing. And then we're picking health, which is how you feel right now, you know, how alert you are, how your stomach feels, that tension, how long you'll live, healthy community. So it's all deeply personal. It comes out from you as your health and what you're in, and then the global thing that can seem distant. And so we want those two to be together where there's this deeply personal, you know, we're looking at, you know, the thing that makes sense to people now is this thing called the social determinants of health. Like very little of what keeps you healthy has to do with a shot or a pill or the surgery and stuff. It's all this social stuff around it that keeps you more likely to get sick or less likely to get sick. So helping people get immersed in the thing that keeps them healthier is a real deeply personal thing and a social thing. And then this thing where look around the pictures of the icebergs, you know, it's far away, it's distant, it seems barren. So we want those two things of, you know, how your gut feels right now and how you imagine the ocean to be two lenses, and so one should break the other. The idea is that the two lenses cause you to think of the other one in a different way.
I really appreciate this vision of bringing together, frankly, real experts in capital and investment, and then saying, let's look at a bigger map. Because that's a great way to approach creating change at the biggest
level. Yeah, we want Fish 2.0 people to wander into health and kind of get their mind blown, and we want people from the health track to wander into Fish 2.0 and say, this is a whole different way of looking at it. Really, there are lots of overlaps I hadn't seen.
Love it.
You know, Monica, we want them overwhelmed and then to make sense.
How do you feel about the SOCAP community and platform highlighting these issues and the fact that you're going to go in and I know you work with investors extensively, but this seems like a slightly different approach, a different piece, different opportunity.
It is. It's a great opportunity for us. We're really, it's very, very exciting for us because I think it's an opportunity for us to build the network among some different communities, as you said. And, you know, sustainable seafood normally is is associated with higher quality and better health. So in general, so there's overlaps there. There's a lot of the business seafood businesses. You know, they might be buying and selling fish, or they might be producing fish, but they're technology businesses, or they're distribution businesses, or they're consumer outreach businesses, or they're it just happens to be that their product is seafood. And so for them to be able to learn from people whose products are different is really a great opportunity for them and for us.
Okay. Now, Kevin and SOCAP leadership have supported me personally to help bring sort of these X factors in, like storytelling and, you know, looking at the imagery and symbolism around what things like oceans represent. And I'm just wondering, as we talk about creating narratives, like, is that important at the level that, that you're working at or not?
It's so important. One of the things that we're doing now in this segment of the competition is we're asking each entrepreneur that's in the competition to write an impact story. And so each person is now writing an impact story of how their business has affected the lives of one person or one community. And I've been starting to see those come in, and they're wonderful. They're great. And there are stories that they don't tell. They're not used to telling this. And at first they all said, why should I do that? And they wanted to say how they were, like, saving the ocean. Or saving. I said, no. Tell us how you save a person or how you affect a community. And and we find that really compelling. All of the investors I know, they say, first I want to hear the impact story, and then I want to hear about the business. Because I don't want to – you know, there's a lot of businesses out there, but first I filter by knowing if – the impact they're having on people and or in the planet in general is worthwhile for me to think about this business. Do you find that?
I think that's totally true. One of the things we have that the ocean is helping us with this year is that there's been this silo of planet-focused investors haven't talked to people-focused investors. And they might even be working in the same communities, but they don't talk to each other. And so one's saving the turtles, one's working with the people. And we're trying to help them through a couple examples, look at holistic investing that helps, you know, the turtles and the people, some of that kind of stuff. But they're not used to doing that because they have this, again, this you know, 19th century epistemology of a theory of change that told them to focus narrowly, which caused them to look at an individual element and not realize that whether the molecule was alive or not. So it's there's a series of consultants who should be run out of the room who got foundations to focus, and they're stuck on being focused. And they should not be focused. They should see the connections. But they were told not to look at connections.
I also think that one thing that we've learned is a lot of businesses think that they're environmental businesses, but basically to be a successful business, you have to be helping people because it's people that are buying your products or your services. And so once they turn it around, they actually see that they are making social change happen.
Right.
And I mean, we've seen that in other sectors like forest deforestation, forestry, where we want to invest in the stewards of the land, for instance. How much cross-sectoral relevance is there? Is this a buzzword idea? And I throw this to both of you, or is this, or does it really? Do people who have worked in other areas, whether it be poverty or climate change or the forests or big data, do their skills and models have a chance of transferring here, or is it actually happening?
Early markets have to have cross-pollination from everybody to make it viable at all. And then you can afford to focus and say, we're just focusing on seafood. But, you know, there are people coming to SOCAP who are about the oceans because they're about women, and that women are involved in fisheries, and that's their reason. And there are people who are coming from turtles, and from wanting the turtles, they said, oh, we work with lots of national parks and UNESCO World Heritage Sites and folks around this bicultural tool. And and they said, you know, the simple thing to them is we want to increase livelihoods to stop poaching. And they said, oh, yeah, we have budget for that today, you know, because they really want that. And they don't know how to do a social investing that increases livelihood, so they don't chop down this, eat that, or whatever. And they're huge interest in it, sort of a root capital light, just lending to those folks, increasing the livelihoods. And so we're trying to figure out how to do that because that's a place they have budget in declining times.
Monica?
I'd say that, yes, absolutely, but my counsel would be to those folks that have a successful model from another area is work with a few businesses in the seafood sector and get their feedback on how that model works and think about how you need to adapt it. It's different in different geographic contexts. It's different even for different fisheries because it's different it's different in different policy contexts where that depending on how the fisheries manage. So absolutely. Bring us those ideas. Start working with us. We can, there's not only Fish 2.0, but other people working in the oceans community that are happy to connect those people with businesses that they can test ideas on.
And it goes from where Monica works to these coastal communities, indigenous coastal communities like we talked about. And one of the best examples on the West Coast actually is the Clayoquot up on the upper part of Vancouver Island. And they're an indigenous, their tribe. But they're also incorporated as a UNESCO Biosphere Reserve, but they were trying to get young people off the Game Boys. So, they were fighting obesity and drug abuse in teenagers, right? And so they changed the food, and they started growing old-time food, but then they started managing the fisheries in the old-time ways, and the kids weren't fat and on drugs and drunk. And so the fishery was deeply restored, but the goal was to save the younger generation. And they're one of the best examples of a tribe reclaiming the culture, which often means reclaiming the indigenous language, which doing some immersion school things. Immersion schools and fisheries in coastal areas work really well together. So you can think who you are and why you do that, and this is how we take care of these fish. And it's the best part of Vancouver Island, what they got of their native fisheries now.
Excellent. Yep. Now, we have a chance here to go to some questions before we lose you guys. I just, want everyone to have a chance to pick your brain. Not just me. This is so fun. Kevin.
Good. Thanks, Jeff. And I would like to remind our audience listening at home, this is the Commonwealth Club of California. My name is Kevin O'Malley. I'm chairman of the Business and Leadership Forum and your host tonight. Our panel tonight is Oceans Open for Business with Jeff Leifer, Monica Jane, and Kevin Jones. Now we're going to turn it over for audience questions, and please wait for me to come over.
I'm confused. Are you working under an umbrella or are you creating an umbrella? What I heard tonight was you are co-opting small fisheries, Fish 2.0. And this man, haven't quite figured out what his role is in that, whether she's under his umbrella, he's under her umbrella, they're both under some other umbrella. Can you clarify this?
Yeah,
I mean, if the guy wants to understand what you're doing and participate in it, I didn't get that information tonight.
Okay, good. Let me take a shot at it, and then they can answer directly. So Kevin has founded this important organization and community called SOCAP, Social Capital Markets, which is a diverse group of investors and philanthropists and angels and corporations that have identified themselves as impact investors, people who simply want to invest their money and get it back, but their primary goal is to make a change in social areas, not just to make a financial profitable return. Ideally, both, but most importantly, a social change in different areas. And so no, she's got a separate organization called Fish 2.0, which is bringing together individual investors who have resources and entrepreneurs who are creative and in the seafood space, and they need each other. Well, he's actually got a
We kind of set up a farmer's market with a lot of tents.
Yeah, right.
No, we do. We're separate.
It's a good question.
Yeah. We kind of set up the farmer's market, and then she has the Fish 2.0
exactly.
tent.
We're not under an umbrella per se, but we work together because
partners.
My objective is fully aligned with Kevin's objective, and Kevin's objective is fully aligned with my objective.
And she brings her tent to other farmers markets, and she brings it to our farmers market, or has her own tent, that kind of thing.
Yeah, thank you for the question.
Yeah.
Okay, we have one more question over here.
Well, sorry.
Hi.
Hi.
You guys were mentioning earlier for entrepreneurs kind of connecting and communicating to impact investors on their language. What, and you mentioned kind of impact story before launching into maybe a business pitch. What would be maybe five key pieces of information that might be falling through the cracks between entrepreneurs connecting with impact investors?
You mean for the business pitch or for the in the impact story?
I'm just getting those two people to connect and communicate.
Well, I always think that the main thing that an entrepreneur should be able to communicate to an investor is, first of all, what they're doing, why it's different, but also, very, very importantly, what their values are. I tell all the entrepreneurs I work with that you want to find an investor that not only is able to help you with your business, but they must be aligned on your values. Mm-hmm. And if they're not aligned on your values, don't take the money. And so I think communicating that and learning about what are the values of the investor is equally important to everything else that you communicate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A similar kind of thing. I mean, it's just, you know, why should I pay attention to this? Figure that any investor has got too many people like you coming to see him or her, right? So why should we pay attention to this? And why should we pay attention to your approach? Why is your approach differentiated? And then why are you credible to do it? And then, you know, from that, I like to see in what way are you a magnet for non-financial resources? You know, who's following you? Who's trying to help? Show me a momentum. You know, I think we have far too many visionaries and far too few operators and number two. So I want to see, you know, don't want to see a visionary with a plan. I want to see a number two who's mm-hmm. dedicated to making the vision of the visionary good and using the visionary, and that can you moderate the impact of the visionary and tell him or her, no, not this now. Remember, we're focused there. So you want to see that kind of reaction with a team. And, you know, then those are the sorts of things. But then it has to be something you're interested in. I'm interested right now in mHealth and Obamacare with cultural literacy, and I'm interested a lot in digital literacy and e-books and digital books and stuff like that for a couple of reasons. I mean, those are both areas where you can move fast and create great good at market rate. That's not true of everything. That's not true of fair trade and never will be. And I've done a bunch of fair trade, and it's hard, and I'd like to do things that are easier where there are some places where, you know, you should grow as fast as the market will allow you. Obamacare is a fragile thing, but it's a great thing that changes the healthcare dynamic and justice, and it makes poor people the most valuable customers. So it should be done really fast now until before somebody tears it up.
And I'll just add, Kevin, that when I wear my venture capital hat, I want to see alignment of the mm-hmm. the origin story, which is really the value issue of the entrepreneur. It has to really make sense that their passion, their true nature has come to this idea, not from an intention of just trying to be successful with a venture, because that passion is often what it's going to take to execute on the vision, as Kevin's saying, to be the number two, to build mm-hmm. a team at least that has the right number two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I want to see startups where people want to give them a lot of stuff.
Hi. Earlier you were speaking about the importance of storytelling, and I always think of like microfinance and the Grameen Bank, and was wondering if there's a similar case yet with sustainable seafood that you could tell us about.
There hasn't been a lot of activity of microfinance in the seafood sector. But there has been some. Mm-hmm. So there are always stories. I think we're not hearing all of the stories. They're not considered like big seafood businesses because of the nature of microfinance. There aren't any microfinance institutions that I know of that are specifically focused on seafood. I'm finding that most of the businesses that are coming to us are kind of mid-size. We're looking at businesses that need, on an average, kind of a $1 million to $10 million investment range in our competition. I know there's many businesses out there that could use smaller scale financing. Those generally are going to take a lot more capacity building. So that's a great place if there's organizations on the ground that can work together with the microfinance groups and do that capacity building for them to find those investment opportunities. Mm. We're not able to do that level of capacity building in an online competition. So we have to work with the businesses that are slightly bigger and slightly more progressed.
How about, though, like, I wasn't super clear, but I meant like a case study that people see, oh, that's, you know, what they did in microfinance, and then it became kind of a big topic.
We will be doing that.
Exactly.
We will be doing that. We're going to be happy to share those stories. We're waiting until the finalists are picked for the competition, which will be next month.
Right.
And then with those finalists, we're going to start sharing stories and case studies and information about it while they're in the competition until the finalists go. We've promised our businesses confidentiality because it's such a competitive space in the seafood marketplace. So we're waiting until next month to be able to share.
And Grameen was not a poster child of what Grameen is for the first 12 to 14 years. I mean, it takes a while to become the iconic poster child, and many failures and many other kinds of things.
I really want to underscore that point. You're going to look back in a few years and really feel like you were part of something. This is the very beginning of something very, very exciting. Fish 2O hasn't been around a long time. I mean, neither has SOCAP, but SOCAP, in terms of bringing its resources and community to focus on a content vertical, it's now. This is the first moment. And so the team, this isn't a coincidence who we have tonight, the team of SOCAP and Fish 2O and other key players in the space is to really address what you're talking about, to have these origin and impact stories come forth, but have them come forth in a way that's sort of within the context of a coherent approach to building out the infrastructure, to refining the skills, to making sure that the entrepreneurs build capacity and have the rigor and discipline to execute. So this is what strategic partnerships are all about, and I think in the next few years you're going to look back and say, oh my God, that's what they were talking about.
And we love to partner with a domain expert, you know, like a Monica in a space like this. We don't want to get smart in fish, you know. We want to get smart in how to bring those things together and make it interdisciplinary and make you think in some different way. Because you got to think about health and oceans together. So we want to do an intentionally mind-breaking kind of thing at our conference.
And at the same time, we're also looking at what have we learned from this Fish 2O experience, and how can we take the design elements of the competition for seafood and use it to build and grow investment opportunities in other sectors.
Right.
It's going to be great storytelling.
Yeah. And it should be like there should be village capital cohorts around fisheries sprouting up lots of folks. And we work really closely with village capital to do accelerators around verticals that have been validated. Yeah, they're great. They're cheaper and faster than anybody.
And final comment on this is that at SOCAP this year, there is a storytelling panel in the oceans and sustainable seafood track. It's the only panel I happen to be moderating, and so glad to report back and tell you how it goes.
Yeah.
Monica, from a global perspective, the entrepreneurs who are applying for funding, do their projects, are they distributed randomly globally? Are you seeing more projects from certain areas of the world? Mm. And from an investor's point of view, where do investors see bigger opportunities? Outside the U.S., or is that an irrelevant factor?
No, it's not at all irrelevant. I'd say let me put it this way. We just launched Fish 2.0 for the first time this year, and we were a little bit constrained on our communications budget because it was the first time we were doing this. And so we communicated about the competition mostly through U.S. media channels, seafood networks, and things, and people that we know. In spite of that, we had entrepreneurs applying from all over the world, Africa, India, the Middle East, Australia, New Zealand, all sorts of places. So we were thrilled that the word spread so quickly. I think the next time we do it, we would get even better global coverage. Most of the investors we have, probably for the same reason, are U.S. or European-centric. I also think that if we did more outreach in other marketplaces, we would start to see more global investors come in. This is a topic that's of great interest to lots of investors and to lots of entrepreneurs, and it's really a question of how can we get the word out. And that's something that SOCAP can help us out with.
Mm-hmm. That's what's happening this week. We're going to have, in the ocean space, over 100 people coming from a dozen countries that haven't had any contact necessarily. Many, many that Monica mm-hmm. does know, and some that that, mm-hmm. that are not in connection with TUO. Yeah. So this is exciting.
Yeah, that's great. And then we want to keep these conversations going with groups that want to keep meeting and moving it forward. We want to build a market in this space.
That's right. SOCAP's going to be sponsoring a post SOCAP conference, Oceans Convening at Hub Oakland in October. There's Fish 2.0's competition and finals in November. There's going to be a number of initiatives going right up through to the next mm-hmm. SOCAP next year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if anybody wants to start to get our stories, if you come to the Fish 2.0 website, you can just sign up and you'll be included on all the mailings and things, so you can kind of follow along and start to see those stories as you go. I think SOCAP also has mm-hmm. an opportunity to get email and news.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of the things we're doing at SOCAP this year is if you want to hear more about oceans, text us your email address. And so we're going to keep that conversation going, and we're going to monitor and you know, manage some listservs for folks or figure out what we do to follow up. Yeah.
Okay, I have one question myself. So for the man or woman who is not directly involved in impact investing mm-hmm. or from the consumer point, from the enlightened consumer point of view, how can we begin to take part in this? Do we put pressure on Whole Foods? How do we do it? And what's the smart way to do it, not just the kind of nice liberal way to do it?
The smartest way to do
it. The Rainforest Action Network way to do it, maybe. Mm.
The best way to do that is to ask questions when you're buying seafood. So when you go to the store and buy seafood, ask the person behind the counter, where did the fish come from? Now, they might tell you something, and you might not know how to interpret that. That's okay, because what makes retailers and supermarkets start to get the information that we want them to gather so that we can start to track where the fish are coming from is that their clients are asking those questions. So our advice is ask questions. Get the answers. You can look up the answers later if you don't know. But if you don't ask, they don't know that you're interested.
You have such a list of questions.
And Kevin, how would you say from your point of view as a pretty savvy marketer, how do you get this word out so people don't think it's just Northern California?
It's a really good question. It's one we're only starting to look at on the retail side. We've been working on sort of the business-to-business side of validating the market that there really is something to invest in when you put your meaning first and your money follows, that it's real and there's a market here. And then we can say, oh, it works in health. It works in oceans. But you know, the problem with both Monica and me is that we have kind of a B2B perspective, and we're not consumer-facing kinds of people. And so we have to add that in some way. It's not in my skill set, but I need to partner with folks because it's a that whole part of it is something different that we haven't figured out yet very well.
Yeah, and a lot of people have tried a lot of foundations. And so what they've concluded is that we start with working with influencers, which mm-hmm. is what Kevin and Monica are doing. And from there, we get our story straight, and we get our narrative clear, and we understand how to engage the broader population specifically. And then we go out with our story, and we go out with our incentives, and we go out with our attempts to create a community. And mm-hmm. I think that's coming, but we're just at the early
moments.
I think
so. I mean, I think local food is a lot easier story because you touch it, you feel it. Fair trade and the oceans are both farther away. And so getting the connection to the stuff down underwater you don't see or the producers in Ecuador that you don't see is a harder story that we hadn't figured that out yet.
Yeah, good point.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we've reached that time in our program tonight where we have only time for kind of a wrap-up question. I would like to remind our audience listening at home, this is the Commonwealth Club of California. My name is Kevin O'Malley. I'm chairman of the Business and Leadership Forum here at the club, your host for tonight. Our program tonight is Oceans Open for Business with our panelists Jeff Leifer, Monica Jane, and Kevin Jones. So I would like to just maybe ask each of you, all three of you, to give us some closing comments, and I would like to end with Kevin Jones since he is the SOCAP man, the man behind SOCAP, along with Gary Bowles, who is the other co-founder. And maybe start with Monica, but just if you'd like to, some closing comments for the people listening on the radio and listening at home and something to prepare us for the SOCAP conference.
Well, I guess my main comment would be that if you're interested in the oceans and you're interested in seafood, start to participate because, as Jeff said, this is the time when a lot of activity is beginning. It's going to be really exciting. And by participating, you'll find your role. So don't wait for your role to come to you. Go and do whatever you can right away and then see what that builds and grows into, because there'll be a lot of growth happening over the next few years.
Thank you, Monica. Jeff?
I would like to say that I believe, after being a venture capitalist and an entrepreneur for a few decades, that this is a very unique moment in the oceans and sustainable seafood space.
Yeah.
That could sound cliche, but I absolutely stand by it. I think this is a super unique moment, and I don't think this moment will last forever. You know, we've got here, you know, we need to have a 10-year vision, but we need to have a lot of activity now and in the next 5 years. It's kind of like an electric vehicle approach. If, you know, if Tesla goes under, you know, we get set back. And so there's a chance for everyone to participate around, you know, a collective vision, collective resources, and really around building a team. So I hope everyone will find a way to participate in whatever aspect of this incredible ecosystem moves you the most.
Thank you, Jeff. Kevin Jones?
Yeah, I think, you know, the overall theme of SOCAP 13 is we're accelerating the good economy. And you can really do that best with a sector kind of approach that we've taken this year, which means we're going to look deeply at the ocean. So we do Fish 2.0, but then we look at the foundations that want to look at that. We look at some of the environmental companies that want to look at that, or environmental agencies, NGOs, and kind of things. So you have to bring all these people together, and they can understand the issue if they're saying, oh, oceans is what I'm talking about. One of the things we're finding this year is that people are coming to SOCAP who wouldn't have come there because they're brought by their love for the oceans, and the same thing with health. So we have to keep bringing these people together who in broader communities, you know, finding the valuable stranger that they wouldn't have found otherwise. And the market's got to do its part, because philanthropy and government, there's not enough money to face the problems of the world. So we're going to put the market to work. That's what we do.
Okay, well, I'd like to thank each of our panelists tonight. Our program tonight has been Oceans Open for Business. I'd like to thank our audience listening at home, and I'd like to thank our audience here at the Commonwealth Club. I'd like to thank our panelists, Kevin Jones, Monica Jane, and Jeff Leifer, who helped put this program together and really is instrumental, and Lindsay Walcott as well. So thank you all for being here. And with that, I would like to close this program of the Commonwealth Club of California, celebrating over 100 years of enlightened public discussion. Thank you.
Good job, folks.